Fall is in the air, and that cooler weather calls for an update in your skincare. Moisturizing is key to keeping wrinkles at bay. That's why we need a skincare routine that's easy, fast, and gives us results. Plus, what if your products had thousands of five-star reviews, were natural and affordable? Well, say hello to Dime Beauty. Dime Beauty is clean, high-end skincare that is affordable, and it really works. Not sure where to start? I highly recommend the Work System. It's everything you need in one powerful package. Take out the guesswork with a proven routine that includes a gentle yet effective cleanser, a super skin toner, two incredible serums, and two luxurious moisturizers. See what everyone is raving about. From serum sets to the always sold-out retinol alternative TBT cream, you'll find your perfect skincare match. Dime has over 2 million happy customers, and their product reviews are literally 5 stars. Love your skin again. Go to DimeBeautyCO.com and unlock your discount. That's DimeBeautyCO.com. That's DimeBeautyCO.com. BeautyCO.com.
Attention shoppers! Wayfair's Black Friday preview sale is here early. Right now, get up to 70% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Score quality furniture for every room in the house, guest-approved bedding for a season of hosting, top brands and cookware, festive holiday decor for indoors and out, and so much more. Whether you need a new sofa that fits the whole family or a new serving dish that fits your famous sweet potato casserole, Wayfair is the place to go for Black Friday deals on finds to feast, get festive, and get comfortable. All season long. Plus, sit back and relax. With Wayfair's fast and easy shipping, everything home comes straight to your home. Right now until October 31st, enjoy 10% back. That's double rewards when you join our new loyalty program. Plus, as a Wayfair Rewards member, you'll get free shipping, access to exclusive sales, and more. There's no place like home for the holidays, and no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. Shop now at Wayfair.com, and for a limited time, enjoy 10% back when you join Wayfair Rewards. Terms apply.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create positive change in the world every day by being a conscious consumer. I'm your host, Laura Alexander Wittig, founder of Brightly.eco, and I started this podcast a few years ago because I wanted a place to talk about the gray areas around sustainability and how being a conscious consumer can be challenging and confusing, but it's totally doable. So join me in the name of reducing waste and living positively in the name of the planet.
Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Good Together listeners, I am so excited to talk to two amazing guests today. And the reason why we're chatting is because Brightly's second annual Sustainability Trends Report is live, which means our team of experts, along with industry veterans, reveal predictions for how the sustainability space is going to evolve in the upcoming year. So you can view that full report by visiting Brightly.eco. But this week, we're zoning in on one trend in particular, which is the urban farming boom. So gone are the days when people solely relied on grocery stores to provide fresh produce or, you know, other essentials for their household. And we're now seeing an increasing number of individuals who are reconnecting with their agricultural roots and are discovering the advantages of urban farming. So two people who are super familiar with this trend are on the show with me today. We have Stephanie Thoreau and Michelle Brune. They're the co-authors of a new book called Small Scale Homesteading. That book gives readers a sustainable guide to gardening, keeping chickens, preserving your harvest, and all of those things. So I'm so excited to welcome both of you to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Laura.
Yes. So Michelle, I wonder if you could get us started with a brief overview of you, and then we'll move to Stephanie.
Yeah. Well, Michelle Bruin, and I run Forks in the Dirt locally here, and a co-author of Small Scale Homesteading. So Forks in the Dirt kind of centers around local food information. So I talk about growing your own, knowing your farmer, and then cooking from scratch. So I'm a suburban homesteader, born and raised in Minnesota. Love to just get people into digging their own food.
And I'm Stephanie Thurow. I'm the author of 3 food preservation cookbooks and co-author of Small Scale Homesteading. I'm a certified master food preserver and food preservation instructor around the Twin Cities, also based in Minnesota. And I am the person behind Minnesota From Scratch. If you follow us on Instagram or if you visit the website, minnesotafromscratch.com. I just really enjoy helping others do more with what they have. And that's what our book's all about.
That's so exciting. And, I think many people listening to the podcast may or may not know this, but one of the big contributors to individual carbon footprint is food. And specifically where you're sourcing your food from, or even just food waste. And my family, we're super passionate about making sure that we are eating as much as we possibly can of the food that we procure. So I love to hear that you both are like super interested in, you know, preservation and, you know, helping people extend the lifetime of food once they've got it. But, you know, really, I think what we're focusing on today, which is also fascinating, is the trend now of people starting to farm their own produce at home. And so, I mean, let's talk about this. I mean, I've honestly seen it all. I mean, I've seen folks living in apartments who are setting up vertical gardens. I've seen people, like my neighbors, have chickens. Like, how do you think this got started?
Oh, I think really people have been like longing for more of a connection, I think, to their food in general. And I think that growing your own or raising some chickens, and it starts with a couple pots on a patio or something for a lot of people. I just think we're looking for that connection. And I do think the pandemic definitely gave us a kick in the butt towards that direction. I think it tastes better. So once you start, you're kind of hooked.
Yeah. And I'm curious to know too, Stephanie, like, you know, from your perspective, is there anything that Michelle didn't cover from that?
I just know that the pandemic really made a difference with the people I personally know. People that never had interest in preserving their own food or growing had the time and seemed a little bit more interested. I could share some of my plants with them and they planted them and had success. I think with the grocery stores being, the shelves being empty here and there, that kind of scared people into thinking more like, what can I do? And there's a lot we can do. We don't have to do it all, but we can do some things. And I mean, just as simple as like an herb garden. I mean, in the winter here, I'll buy a pack of herbs from the co-op or a little bundle of cilantro and it's $5. I mean, just a few seeds. And then, you know, you can save those seeds year after year and never really have to buy them again. It adds up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I totally agree. I think taste and cost and all these things kind of, you know, come together to create this equation for the rise of this popularity. But I mean, I'd also mention too, like you just said, price, right? Like we are, you know, for better or for worse, starting to see the cost of food going up. And, you know, according to the USDA, food prices in January 2023 were 10% higher than the year prior. And let's not even talk about eggs. I think eggs have like, I think stabilized a little bit now, but I feel like the economics can't be totally outweighed, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For sure. And I think, you know, seed starting is such a great option to kind of help that economic impact keep down. Even if you're buying grow lights, Which are kind of like the biggest ticket item if you're going to really get into seed starting, especially up north in our zone. Both Stephanie and I are in zone 4 up in Minnesota. Okay. So we really need to, if we're going to grow anything that takes a long time, like tomatoes, peppers, eggplants, a lot of those long season hot weather crops, we really need to start those inside if we're going to do justice to our crops and our harvest. But I mean, a seed pack, $2 to $5, and that's like the same price as like one single plant. And instead, you've got probably 2 or 3 years worth of seeds for that same amount. And it's so fun to be able to take it from a seed all the way through to a harvest, preserving the food, eating the food, and then usually being able to save those seeds too.
Yeah, I mean, that's so interesting because you're right. I don't think I have ever thought about getting my own seeds from plants. But like you're mentioning, it's really not as hard as we think it is. And I feel like a lot of this too becomes, you know, I would say just like second nature once you really get started. So, I mean, I think speaking of getting started, I know the trend we're talking about is quote unquote urban farming. I know you both focus specifically on, what we like to call urban homesteading, right? Like farming, meaning you're going to sell to others versus homesteading. Like this is specifically growing your own food. So, I mean, let's get into it. I mean, like how should somebody who has zero garden right now think about getting started growing their own food?
Well, we always tell people to start small, something that you're really interested in, whether that is making your own lotion, making your own soap, or if it's getting out into the garden, maybe just starting with like the potted tomato or a small herb garden or something. Start with what you're truly interested in. If you're not having a good time doing it, try something else. Don't keep doing it. So that's number one rule or tip we always tell everybody. You should be feeling, you know, rewarded with what you're doing and satisfaction in it. And if you're not liking it, try something else. And, you know, you don't have to have this mindset where you have to go big and jump in because that becomes really overwhelming for people.
100%. And also I would say that really, this is like a new kind of way of life that you can start in on. And it's not like a race to a finish line. There's no checklist that you have to like hit all the dots or whatever. This is just adding as you go and growing with your family, with your community, and learning new skills along the way.
Well, and you know, you're right. I think thinking about it from a family perspective is so important too. Like in addition to many people needing to provide for somebody other than themselves, you can get everybody involved and be, you know, in a situation where it becomes less of a chore and more of the, more of a fun activity. And I feel like, you know, there are so many different ways that people can be, you know, involved, whether we're talking about like, you know, literally going out into your yard and building a raised bed and doing it that way. But I think the main, you know, some of the key points that I've taken from your variety of resources available in the world are like, you're right. Don't get overwhelmed and just don't worry about it being expensive, right? I'm sure oftentimes people come and say like, I'm worried about the cost, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they think they need to, you know, invest in these big new fancy garden beds or have some big structure built up, but you really don't. I mean, my mom is super handy, but she and Michelle actually uses logs to form the exterior of a garden bed sometimes. I have 6 or 7 garden beds that are repurposed from people in my neighborhood that were getting rid of their garden beds that they weren't using. My husband took them apart and redesigned them, and that's what we use. I mean, you can be really thrifty with it. You don't need the most expensive and nicest equipment and new tools. I mean, I don't know if you guys have the Buy Nothing or whoever's listening is part of a Buy Nothing page, but that's super big here in Minnesota, especially in the Twin Cities. And you wouldn't believe the amazing things that we have gotten from other people and that we've given to other people within the community at zero cost.
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of Buy Nothing groups. I talk about them almost every episode, but I totally agree where, you know, maybe let's say you're looking to start like a vertical garden, like, you know, and you want like a fancy one, maybe somebody's not giving away something like that on a Buy Nothing group, but I mean, hey, you might be surprised, but regardless, you can still, I actually see people doing things like well, when eggs were expensive, people were like giving eggs to each other. But I remember people sharing seeds and sharing like different, you know, varietals of plants that might not be available at a local store. So I think that's super interesting. And I guess speaking about the different types of gardening, I wonder if you can explain a little bit to our audience about like the maybe different ways they could go about doing it, such as like, yeah, a raised bed or some or things indoors. Like, what are some of your favorite systems that people can use?
Well, for starting seeds, I have the grow lights and all that stuff set up. So because I have this setup area, I really love growing microgreens in the winter as well. I think that that is a really great way to like extend the use of your grow area. So you can use that like once everything shuts down for us, you know, in like sometimes October, sadly, or November, we can keep growing indoors that way. And that's really, really simple. That's no extra cost, no extra equipment, except for what you already have for seed starting. Season extension for us is really important as well. So I grow in like low tunnels and cold frames. I also use winter sowing, which is really fun. That's a way to start seeds outside in like an old milk jug or rotisserie chicken container or whatever you've got. So you're repurposing some plastic. You're setting the seeds outside even in winter, but you're getting a little bit of a jump start on that because you've created this little mini greenhouse. And that's a huge trend up in the northern states. So I think that there's so many different ways to get going that way. What else do you think, Stephanie?
Well, just like the vertical gardening, like you mentioned, we both love our cattle panels. That's a great way to grow more with less space. Michelle has a tomato wall, which is incredible that she can talk about in a minute, but I use the panels to make arches, and that allows me to grow beans, you know, runner beans that grow like 10 feet high. They just cover it, and then they have all these beautiful little flowers before the bean pods grow and the hummingbirds and the bees and everybody loves it. I also have done pickling cucumbers and even cherry tomatoes I've put in there, but that's a great use of space. If you don't have a ton of space, you can do flowers that way or really a lot of things. Tell them about your cattle panel tomato wall, Michelle.
Well, I love growing tomatoes, but I, you know, like to grow them all in kind of one space. So I move this cattle panel system around my garden because you do want to practice a little bit of crop rotation, especially with tomatoes. So you don't want to grow tomatoes in the same space year after year. So cattle panels are super easy to move around. They're really flexible. So you can kind of either bend them like Stephanie does to make an arch. And they're a super cheap way and a reusable, easy to repurpose kind of a way for that. Or you can use them as like a wall. And that's kind of what I do. I just put them straight up so that they're, you know, 8 or 10 feet tall, two of them next to each other. So I've got probably like 15 by, you know, 10 foot space that I grow all the tomatoes on, and it grows up and over those, because when you're growing indeterminate tomatoes that keep on growing till frost, they will get that tall. They get crazy tall, and it's so fun to see. It's fun.
That's awesome. Yeah, as you both were talking about that, I just quickly like googled cattle panel, and folks, if you're not familiar with that, it's just basically like a metal grid, and it's just a really, really affordable way to make a trellis. Basically, you don't have to go out and buy an expensive trellis. As a matter of fact, like, I am always floored about how expensive stuff is when I go to like a Home Depot type situation. Like, if it's labeled, it's like bespoke made for gardening, sometimes I think it can be really expensive. So what you can do is just flex a little bit of a DIY muscle and get some of these things that we're talking about. And like, you know, you don't even have to, you know, put wood around the panel if you don't need to, right? But I think it's important for folks to understand that, like, again, it doesn't have to be expensive to get started. And actually, you kind of, you both just kind of talked to me a little bit about, you know, favorite items that you grow. And I was going to ask that. So like, what are your favorite things that you grow, you know, regardless of skill level? And then maybe like, what are some beginner type, you know, vegetables and things of that nature that you like to recommend people start with that are, you know, maybe a little bit easier?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, this is a tricky one because, like, it, I really want people to grow what they like, you know. But beyond that, I think some of the easiest things to grow are going to be lettuces, things that you can start early on in the season. Like right now, for most of the United States here, lettuces are going to be fine to get out there. In Minnesota, we might have a little while longer, so we're getting some more snow. This is a never-ending winter for us here. But lettuces, I would say, I think beans are always a great first option. They are really easy. And if you've got bush beans, you can grow those in the ground and not have to trellis them or give them any kind of support. And then if you want to grow pole beans and use some of that trellising, use some vertical gardening aspects, then you can really get a lot out of a small space. Plus, I mean, you can use it to, like, you know, keep some line of sight things out of your view if you want to. It's a really quick growing crop for that. I think those are probably my favorites for easy ones.
And I think cherry tomatoes are always pretty simple. I don't know. And gosh, I don't know. We are always switching it up, and it seems like something that could be really simple for me may not be simple for someone else. And year after year, it changes too. So I don't want to give people that idea that these things are always easy, but cherry tomatoes seem to always do really well here anyway. And let's see. Oh, radishes. I've had really good luck growing those. Those are fun. I don't know. Onions.
I'll throw in herbs are really easy, because herbs are, they, in general, any kind of herb you want to grow will probably grow in whatever soil you have, whatever sun amount you have. You know, I mean, basil is a little bit of a diva, but almost everything else. And a lot of them can be used not only for culinary stuff, but then also for, if you have chickens, you can throw them in the chicken coop, or you can dry them and you can have herbal tea all winter that, you know, didn't come prepackaged and, you know, from across the world. So there's so many ways that we can use whatever we're growing in our gardens to really, you know, supply your family and a lot of times your friends and neighbors too.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that reminded me too, You're totally right. There's really not one single thing that grows like super well everywhere. You're right. Herbs, I think, are pretty hardy. Just on the herb note, if you haven't cooked with fresh herbs lately, I totally invite you to do that, because, I mean, look, it's, if you don't have herbs that you're growing, it can be expensive and more difficult to do so. But for instance, we just did a ragu last night, and we literally used a bunch of fresh thyme, and it elevated the dish so much that I was like, I'm the type of person where I typically use dried stuff. And so I was just like, this is amazing. Like this is going to just really up level the way this tastes. And it does. So, I mean, I think just not underestimating that, like, okay, maybe you don't have the time to do a full vegetable garden, but maybe you do have time to grow some herbs, and that's going to, you know, make you have tastier food. Maybe you'll eat all your leftovers, et cetera. So I feel like that's such a great tip, right?
For sure. Yeah, and right. I think herbs are great. They're like the gateway to gardening, I think. That is where I started. That was a long time ago, but I forgot. Herbs, that was a great suggestion.
Yeah. And I think money saving. Herbs are so expensive at the store,
yes,
right?
They
are. So that's why people buy, on general, people are going to buy a jar of dried herbs rather than buy fresh every time. And also, that's really, besides not being very cost effective, that's a huge carbon footprint when you're getting a tiny little thing of herbs packaged in plastic like that. So, I mean, and just like you mentioned how it elevated that dish from just the herbs. Can you imagine like if the tomatoes were fresh and like everything?
Yeah.
So that's why we love gardening, because it tastes good. I mean, yes, it's a little bit more work, or a lot more work sometimes, but my gosh, the flavor and then the health benefits of having like local food that has been harvested within a couple days and then it's on your table. That's a huge difference in nutritional value too.
Absolutely. And I mean, I was going to mention the taste as well, because I think, you know, it's one of those things that's hard to describe until you've done it. And my mom lives in Texas. That's where I grew up. And, you know, she's had to employ various different gardening methods because it can get, the weather can be so extreme there. You know, it's a great place for growing tomatoes, but it's not great for other things. Anyway, the last time I was over was kind of, I want to say it was like late summer. And so she had so much like tomatoes basically growing, you know, coming out of her ears, and she made a few meals with it. And it was just so good. I mean, I find it so much easier to eat healthy too. Like, you know, the concept of eating, you know, a bunch of salads and things every day, I think can seem overwhelming to most of us. But if you have a system that you can use where, it actually is growing yummy, fresh vegetables, like, why not? You know what I mean? Like, it makes your life so much easier. You're right. Like, there is a little bit of maintenance involved, but you know, I wonder, had a random thought pop in my head, but I wonder if you compare the amount of time people spent in the produce aisle, picking everything out and like overlaid that with time they spent in the garden, I'd be curious, you know what I mean? I wonder if there's like some kind of equation we could do.
Right. Plus all the added benefit of just like the garden therapy for your soul and mind. I mean, it is pretty amazing. It sounded really corny before I got to that point, but I'm there and it's real.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I mentioned we've got this like never ending winter up here, but I have some low tunnels, some places where I've covered some things in plastic. So I'm able to get into the ground and like start planting seeds in the actual ground finally up here. And I was in the middle of doing that and I just sat down on my little garden cushion for like 3 minutes probably and took some deep breaths and I heard the birds singing and it was, I mean, absolutely restorative to my whole being. And yeah. I think that's another huge reason for being able to make time to get out into the garden. Just like we have to make time to, you know, exercise and all the other personal care. I kind of look at gardening as like personal care time and family care and, you know, food preservation. I mean, all of it is, it's all interwoven. And I think that's like the fun aspect of homesteading for me, is being able to see how all of the different pieces to the puzzle and all like the different chapters in the book kind of all end up working together.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and it's so rewarding, to your point, to be able to give back and eat well. I feel like it's just so interesting. So one of the things that we talked a little bit about in our trend report here on Brightly is, you know, different innovations that are helping people, you know, they're helping the process become a little bit easier for people. So like we mentioned, there are, you know, companies out there that make vertical gardens that don't require a lot of space that can actually be used indoors. I've had a chance to try out Lettuce Grow and Garden. Both of them are great options. They're both, you know, relatively expensive. So I think it's one of those things where, you know, you need to make sure that what we're recommending fits within your budget and your, you know, your lifestyle. But we also just talked about earlier in this podcast about those cattle panel projects, which again, very, very affordable. And you can literally go, you know, go in there and create something that's interesting. One thing that we haven't talked about that I'd love to talk a little bit about is chickens, because I feel like chickens in particular are, you know, kind of trendy, which is weird. It's like, come on now, chickens have been around forever. Like, why is this trendy? But there's a new company out there called Coop. We have not had a chance to try this yet at Brightly. Maybe there's a chicken coop in my future that I'm not aware of. But, you know, this is a smart chicken coop, which is interesting. That has like a camera and all sorts of interesting features. But I'm curious to know a little bit about, like, you know, when people approach you about raising chickens, like, are you like, heck yes? Or are you like, maybe this is like more advanced? Like, what are your advice for people that are like chicken curious?
Well, first of all, check if you can have them. There are different ordinances and different, all over the country. So first check that. And then, if you aren't currently allowed to, but you really do want to, I can help you with that. I changed my city's ordinance a couple of years ago, and people are doing that all over the country, slowly but surely. Because I think that it's just kind of the old guard is maybe getting out of a lot of the city council And a lot more young people are actually becoming more involved on a like grassroots political level, which I think is really interesting and really, really makes me hopeful for the future. But yeah, I would say it's a time commitment of a couple. It's maybe not so much the time commitment as the initial cost investment to set up chickens. And, you know, I think really and truly, unless you're doing it in a large scale, like not in an urban or suburban setting, you're probably going to maybe break even, maybe with the cost of eggs. But it's not about a cost savings when you're growing chickens. It's about knowing that you're giving those chickens a really good life. You're getting really good eggs out of the deal. And then for me, chickens are truly like integral to my little homestead here. And it's because they eat the extra broccoli leaves or whatever from the garden. And then they also add to the compost, you know, really a lot.
Yeah.
They're a heavy, heavy nitrogen addition to the compost pile. And I mean, anybody who keeps chickens is going to have way better compost than anybody who doesn't keep chickens. in my humble opinion. And then, you know, in the end, you're getting these amazing eggs out of it. So they're kind of like, they come full circle, I think. What do you think, Stephanie?
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm on the heck yes team. But you do have to know that, you know, they do, you know, poop a lot, and you're going to have to clean their coop and give them water, fresh water and food and be there. It's not something you just set up and forget about. Chickens are very social. Most of them are friendly. I really like waking up in the morning, going outside with my coffee, letting them out. Here where I live, we can only have three. And, but those three provide nearly 800 eggs a year. And I am just a family of three here. So, and my husband doesn't eat eggs, chicken eggs. He can't have chicken eggs. He can have duck eggs, but I don't have the ducks yet. But, so we have more than enough eggs with our three chickens. They're great at pest control. I mean, my one chicken eats mice, which I didn't know they did that until I saw her pop out of my rhubarb patch with a mouse in her mouth.
Oh my gosh.
Shaking it like a dog with a dog toy.
My gosh,
and I'm like,
that is so funny.
Yeah, it blew my mind. And so, yeah, just, you know, you're committing to this for its lifetime or their lifetime. So just know that. But otherwise, yeah, I'm heck yes, team.
I love that. No, that's great. And like my husband will be excited about this because he really wants us to get chickens. We actually have a pretty good spot for them, but I've just been like, I don't know. I have like chicken anxiety. I'm like, oh no, like what if, you know, anyway, but I am glad to hear that, you know, they're, it's not as intimidating as it sounds. We actually eat an insane amount of eggs in my family. Like I eat a ton. My daughter is 1.5 and she like, for breakfast, if she could have fresh scrambled eggs every day, she would be totally fine. Like she loves that. So it's probably a cost savings for us in the long end. But that's so interesting. I love it. And you know, I think in general, the thing that is stuck out to me with our conversation has been, there are so many different ways for people to get involved in urban. Well, again, we'll call this homesteading because farming, I think we talked about the difference here. And it doesn't necessarily need to be something that is intimidating or something that you have to like fit yourself into a box for, right? And I think that's a big theme of what we talk about on this podcast. You don't have to, you know, maybe see your Instagram accounts and see these people with these like insanely large gardens and a ton of chickens. Like you don't have to aspire to that. You could literally just say, I'm going to start small. I'm going to get some herbs and I'm going to like up level my cooking that way. And I think that's something that stuck out to me as I viewed, you know, all of your social media and took a look at your book. So I'm curious to know if you have any other sort of like last minute tips you'd love to give our audience before we wrap up.
We bought our house 15 years ago and there was one vegetable, well, I guess one garden behind the garage that they had built when they built the house, which was, I don't know, 50 years before we moved here.
Yeah.
And so in that time, this big ash tree grew and shaded this area. So when we moved in, we were trying to grow stuff, but year after year, I would pretty much have everything in the garden dead by mid-July or August because, you know, you got to water stuff. I wasn't great about that. But for Michelle and I, when we had our own children, I have one daughter, she has two boys. getting them involved and seeing their excitement, you know, helping plant seeds and water and harvest and eating the tomatoes or the beans or whatever right off of the plant, just excited us to keep going and expanding. So every year here, we've expanded our gardens. And then last year we put a bunch of gardens in the front yard. So I guess, what would I tell my past self? Just, yeah, do more of, keep doing what you like. I mean, that's really the best tip, is just follow your passion. If you're into flowers, maybe do a little zinnia garden. Yep. I mean, they are beautiful. They bring in all the beneficial insects. They make great cut flowers. So, you know, you can make a bouquet and more are already on their way. Yeah.
I love that you mentioned that too, because I'm a huge fan of dahlias and they grow so well up here in Washington. There's a bunch of dahlia farms. And I was intimidated because it's like tubers and all the, and I was like, I don't know what that means, you know, but I figured it out. I planted the bulbs and I will tell you, I had the most beautiful dahlia garden last year in the autumn. And I just felt so, it was such a rewarding experience. And, but again, it came from a passion that I had for those types of bouquets.
Yeah.
Right. Dahlias are beautiful.
Oh, I love dahlias. I'm jumping on the dahlia wagon finally this summer because a local flower farmer was like, Michelle, you should try this. I'm like, okay. But you mentioned flowers, and I just want to throw out here that we plant a ton of flowers in our vegetable gardens, both Stephanie and I. I mean, we're probably like at least a quarter flowers, because companion planting like makes sense, and it also it benefits the pollinators so much. And so that's one thing that I think gets me excited, and as a tip with getting kids involved and just yourself staying motivated with all of this, once you see the impact that your little bit of not grass does in your yard, the way just diversity, growing biodiversity anywhere that you can, is going to make a real impact on nature as a whole. And then you start seeing that you, how nature is working with you and how you are working with nature. And then all of a sudden, like one day it dawns on you that you're part of nature too. You're not separate from it. And so when you get that inspiration to keep on going, I think that that is what's going to like slowly move the needle with the whole sustainability piece. And that's one of the reasons I think Stephanie and I are so excited that we finally got this book out there, because I think it really will help people move that needle.
Absolutely. Well, I could not agree with you more. I mean, this has just been such a fascinating conversation, and just wanted to thank you both for joining us. So listeners, we're going to include links to all of the things we talked about in our show notes. Please don't forget to check out Small Scale Homesteading at your local bookstore or, you know, various places online. And of course, we'll include links to all the socials as well. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you about what you're growing or what you're excited to grow. And like, I think I'm going to go into the house right now and talk to my husband and be like, we're going to get a chicken.
Yay!
It's
going to
happen. It's going to happen. Yeah.
I hope you do. Oh, remember, gosh, though, they have boundary issues. So,
okay. All right. Okay.
Which means they have no boundaries.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Keep them out of the garden.
Yes,
I'm so excited.
Okay.
And Laura, you might have a couple people who could help you with any problems you encounter.
Oh, I think so. Okay. Well, no, hey, I mean, I might take you up on that, certainly. And, you know, I would just love to. Of course, we're going to stay in touch, but thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Good Together. To get show notes and more, head to brightly.eco/podcast. Finally, don't forget to join in on the conversation with us on social media. You'll find us on almost everything at brightly.eco. Don't forget, we're all on this journey together, so have fun putting the planet first and stay curious.
Fall is in the air, and that cooler weather calls for an update in your skincare. Moisturizing is key to keeping wrinkles at bay. That's why we need a skincare routine that's easy, fast, and gives us results.
Plus, what if your products had thousands of five-star reviews? Were natural and affordable? Well, say hello to Dime Beauty. Dime Beauty is clean, high-end skincare that is affordable, and it really works. Not sure where to start? I highly recommend the Work System. It's everything you need in one powerful package. Take out the guesswork with a proven routine that includes a gentle yet effective cleanser, a super skin toner, two incredible serums, and two luxurious moisturizers. See what everyone is raving about. From serum sets to the always sold-out retinol alternative TBT cream, you'll find your perfect skincare match. Dime has over 2 million happy customers, and their product reviews are literally 5 stars. Love your skin again. Go to DimeBeautyCO.com and unlock your discount. That's DimeBeautyCO.com. That's DimeBeautyCO.com.
From your fryer to the table, it's a quick trip for crispy fries. But how about a crosstown delivery? McCain SureCrisp fries are designed to go from fryer to container to carrier to passenger seat across town during rush hour down a shortcut that wasn't all that short to a doorstep before they hit the table. And that first bite, the crispiness speaks for itself.
Mmm.
To the last bite, McCain SureCrisp fries go the distance. See how far our fries can take your business at surecrisp.com/delivery.